Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go again. That's a good thing. It's the 24th day of February 2016. The climate is in crisis, but it is every day. And right now it's just plain weird outside here in the foothills of the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia, Stan. Yes, indeed. No, really. We've got a bizarre... It looks like the clouds are at war with each other outside this evening. And, yeah, did I mention it's the 24th day of February 2016? And it's not because I'm some sort of recumbent creature of indolent leisure or anything. I had to turn on the air conditioner in the studio today. I'm not kidding. It is, with the air conditioner running in here, it is 68 degrees in the fabulous Horn studio. No, really. I guess you'd have to be here to approve. Everybody's experiencing climate change somewhere. And apparently, there's the mix desk here is experiencing something entirely different. And so, please pardon as the quality of the mic audio goes in, goes out, goes around, goes about, what have you. This is, of course, Wednesday, the middle of the week. It is hump day, downhill to Friday. The day before Thursday, the day after Tuesday. And let me just say that for those of you who have not yet gotten on board with following the trials, tribulations, and occasionally liquored up shenanigans of the Farrell clan on Outsiders over on WG in America, I heartily encourage you to do so. Oh yeah, and it's tough for me to talk about it because I'm really quite enjoying the program, but I don't want to give away any spoilers because. Oh my goodness, there's just all kinds of stuff goes on. There are some things I can say without ruining anything. The opening theme song involves banjos. I'm not a big banjo fan. I'm to that extent. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm sort of an atypical hillbilly in my non-adoration of the banjo. Yeah, but somebody with this really strong voice just bellering out the theme song. So I wanted to see who it was, and lo and behold, I went to check in on the cast and crew, see who, and. The composer of the series music, hey, get this, is a man by the name of Danny Harrison. And I kind of went, I realized that Danny was spelled D-H-A-N-I, and I may be mispronouncing it. It may be Donnie Harrison. But I think that's George Harrison's son. Yeah. So, last night was really fun. Oh, there's some real live, honest to God, for those of us who have to deal with mountaintop removal, there is some real live, honest to God, cleansing, cathartic, schadenfreude, and probably seven or eight other funny language words that you get to feel when you're, yes. And the cast, the brilliant acting, catch it if you want to. You'll enjoy it. And then I missed something at the end of the program that Sparky hadn't. And he pointed it out to me. Oh, wasn't that a wry twist? Yes, it was. By the way, if you would like to run over and join us in the Madcap Merry real-time, real-world multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. Uh-huh. And there you will run into Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man and Texas Tea, all capably moderated by longtime, indefatigable, inveterate chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space this evening to become Man Cave. Yes. So jump in there. I'm there. It's fun. We have a good time. Great conversation over there. And by the way, Jug of Punch points out in the room, you think it's weird weather. I saw my first robin today for 2016 here in Northeast Ohio. Stuff's been poking through the ground here. Of course, it's worth noting, and a lot of people don't realize it, robins are not migratory birds. They just kind of go to ground and tough out the winter. They're some tough little birds. And they change diet from good weather to bad. There were these trees, and I forget what kind, but they had red berries on them all up and down Constitution Avenue in Washington, D.C., and in the worst parts of January, the very trees themselves would vibrate with the chattering of robins eating those berries, and probably, for all I know, the animal kingdom being the animal kingdom, getting downright shwasted. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I should also mention that this here is what we like to call a listener-supported program. And thanks very kindly to all of you who responded to Thomas's challenge last night. That was, we were able to crawl out of the hole for the most part. And we only pulled up $70 short. So the fundraising goal for this evening is $270, and that's easy. That's 10 at 270, 10 at 27, 1 at 270, 10 at 270. Who am I kidding? 1 at 270, 10 at 27. Steam beginning to come out of my ears. We'll have to leave the cipher into the people who do it for real. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, like I said, prayer meeting Wednesday, so we'll get that started in a moment or two. But before we go, let's see. I usually do the prayer meeting Wednesday shtick right off the bat, but I've just seen a couple of things that have me fit to eat dirt and run rabbits. And I feel like, rather than letting it get lost in the madness of prayer meeting Wednesday, I feel like we ought to kind of put them at the front. And this, I put this out there as a sort of public service announcement. I know we've got a couple of people, a few members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who live in Mississippi, Stan, and are doing their part to hold back the barbarian hordes there. And I just read this a little bit ago and went, well, son of a... So if you're down there or you know somebody in Mississippi, Stan, particularly in the Jackson, Mississippi area, which is, of course, the capital of the state of Mississippi, make sure they know this is there. Because, you know, just wow. As of today, a warning has gone out to those humanoid life forms who reside in Jackson, Mississippi, to eschew the consumption of the city's allegedly potable water. Oh, great. Well, the rain can't keep the little kid off the dirt bite. I just heard... Great. Makes me want to put a stick in his spokes. But never mind. No, you can't drink the water if you should... Well... Honest to God, I hate that motorcycle. If you are female and pregnant in Jackson, Mississippi, and you know, a consumer of water, which would make you, you know, basically any living thing, but particularly pregnant human females, don't drink the water. I repeat, do not drink the water. Do not seek the treasure. Water. Because the water is, not to put too fine a point on it, poison. With, again, not to put too fine a point on it, lead. You see what I did there? Lead point. No, the warning went out today that the municipal drinking water should not be consumed by pregnant women or children due to elevated lead levels. Given the state of their thin gray settlings that slosh around between their ears and pass for brains, it is absolutely okay, however, for good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-middleist, amosexual, Republican men to drink all the Jackson, Mississippi water they want, because they're immune to the effects of lead. Lead hurts working brains, not Republican brains. No, really. Children, pregnant women, don't drink the water in Jackson, Mississippi. 8 months ago, the State Department of Health in the state of Mississippi, Stan, began a mandatory sampling program for lead and copper. Last month, the results came back, and it turns out lead levels exceed appropriate amounts. So then they resampled, yeah, just to make sure, because science-y stuff. And of the 100 sites that were resampled, round two showed 11 were above the lead action level. And where have we heard this before? Government, which is, of course, controlled by a bunch of family values conservatives, have looked at local media and said, no, goodness gracious, that water's safe for everybody to drink. It's not unsafe. but they went ahead and told the women and small pregnant women and small children not to drink the lead-laden water out of an abundance of caution. So now, because of big government interfering and outside agitating in the state business of the good, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual people of Mississippi, now they're going to have to test the water some more. Because really, when you got a lead problem, mitigation's kind of difficult. Yeah. Just makes you feel all tingly inside, doesn't it? Yeah. No. And of course, that's going to be one after another, after another, after another, as these. Remember when Hillary Clinton's pal, Henry Kissinger, talked about the domino theory, you know, the Chinese of Vietnam, and then it'll be Laos, and then it'll be Cambodia, and then India, and then Poughkeepsie will fall to the communists, and they'll come, the commie hordes will come streaming across the dry parts of the Rio Grande River, right? Well, there's another domino theory. And this one seems to have a lot more probability, for coming true. Dominoes in American cities are falling and tick, 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 tick. I mean, lead poisoning. Because, see, to try to do something, I mean, we can't get rid of all the lead pipes in America. I mean, what? It's not like we're capable of doing it. We're just America. It's not like we're a competent country like, say, Germany or, you know, Japan or Australia. We can't get rid of all the lead pipes and stuff that are poisoning Americans. It never ever. Wouldn't be practical. Why do I say that? Well, there's more news out of Flint, too. It's been 16 months now since the Flint, Michigan water supply has been identified as a source of Legionnaire's disease. I don't know if you've ever known somebody who's been through that. I do. And she's a dear friend, and we damn near lost her. And still don't know where she got it from, but she lingered at death's door. And frankly, not a lot of folks had a lot of hope. She's tough as nails. And she battled back. But Legionnaire's disease damn near killed her. So it's not a trifling thing. So it was 16 months ago that people found out that the Flint water supply was the likely source of Legionnaire's disease in Flint. And remember, we're talking about the Koch brother-funded, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual government, Republican government and legislature of the state of Michigan, 16 months after they found the Legionella bacteria in the Flint water supply, Governor Rick Snyder, his government still hasn't gotten around to actually formally, scientifically, determinatively, decidedly test to find the source of the Legionnaire's disease bacteria in the Flint water supply. The Detroit News, reporting on the problem, said that not one of the five government agencies who serve, of course, at the will and pleasure of that Koch brothers creature, Rick Snyder, who, and you know, I'm mean, okay? We understand I'm mean. Rick Snyder shouldn't resign. Rick Snyder should not be prosecuted. Rick Snyder should get a sharp, sharp knife and open up his bowels and take them out and play tiddlywinks with them until he dies. Rick Snyder should commit suicide for what he has allowed to happen to the people of Flint, Michigan. But no, none of his five government agencies that were aware of the Legionnaires' disease outbreak investigated the water system for the actual scientific presence of Legionella bacteria. Not one. Not 20%, 40%, 60%, 80%, 100%. 0%. It was October 2014 when the county health department said they were worried that the Legionella bacteria might be present in the Flint water supply. And there have been 10 people dead in the area from Legionnaires' disease. And apart from the 10 people who got dead, 87 more cases of Legionnaires' disease had been reported as of January 2016. You know, in other countries, something like this might prompt hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people to go and camp out around the governor's mansion and saying, "We're not leaving till you do." I mean, dead of winter stuff. But not in Merca. Cable's still on. Yeah. So, I don't know. I just thought that was... I thought that was appropriate to share. And I thought you might find it beneficial, because I know we've got members of the Horn FCC in the general region. Meanwhile, down in Florida, my God, I'm just a little ray of sunshine this evening, aren't I? Even Kate out on the Front Range would probably rather hear the hacking and hawking of the obnoxious prayer meeting Wednesday preacher guy than all this happy news. Yeah. Meanwhile, down in Florida, Stan, also in the clutches of Republicans. Ain't everybody? Officials there say three pregnant women have tested positive for the Zika virus, having traveled to countries known to be affected by it. That means there are 32 confirmed cases of Zika virus in Florida. Now, you may recall when we were having hissies over Ebola. Well, that was not nearly the grave threat that... I don't know. Is Devin around? Devin coined Ebola for us. Yeah, how do we handle Zika? Unindicted co-conspirator Governor Rick Scott of Florida has asked for 250 extra Zika antibody tests from the Centers for Disease Control. Centers for Disease Control, of course, being one of those job-killing, regulating, big government agencies of the nanny state. Because, see, the Zika antibody tests, you can't get them on the capitalist free market. They are not, as the saying goes, commercially available. Mm-mm, no. And the state of Florida has already run through 255 Zika antibody tests since February 9th. But hey, not to worry, not to worry. Unindicted co-conspirator Florida Governor Rick Scott's administration says that there are still they've still got 1,195 Zika virus tests. Turns out you can apparently, the CDC thinks, you can transmit the Zika virus through sex. Ain't that just inspiring? Jennifer in Australia saying, wow, remember the days when they said, when you go to Bali, don't drink the water, you'll get Bali belly. Now they have to say, when you go to America, don't drink the water, you'll get Merca brain. Well, you know, the Republicans are worried about their dwindling numbers, so what better way to, swell their ranks than by lead poisoning a significant portion of various populations, thereby ensuring that they will be, T-Rumps, you heard his happy victory speech last night. Oh, it was weird in Nevada, Stan, last night. Really weird. Among other things, T-Rump crashed a Ted Cruz party where Glenn Beck was talking, just grabbed a microphone and shut the Becker head right down. Wow. It's beginning to look a lot like Putschmas. No singing, damn it! But, you know, if it honks like a goose and it looks like a goose and it steps like a goose, it's T-Rump. No, he did. But then when he was making his victory speech, he talked about all the demographics that they had won in Nevada, and then pointed out that we've won the college-educated, and we've won the undereducated. And then he declared by way of exclamation point, and I love the poorly educated. As Dr. Bill observed earlier this afternoon, I'll bet you do, Donald. I'll bet you do. Yeah, today, that reminds me, today was an awesome edition of the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. Dr. Bill took on the Trump phenomenon, and I haven't heard anybody explain it better. It was Dr. Bill with his velvet-covered axe handle at his very absolute finest. So the file will be going up shortly after this program is over, and I heartily encourage you to take advantage of the opportunity to download it. Hell, just sign up for the RSS feed. It's not like it costs you anything. No, it's free. Just like everything else at the Horn. Okay. We've got our first disagreement of the evening. Subject line, Rick Snyder. Steve in New York says, I'm going to disagree with you about Rick Snyder's fate. He should receive a Flint water enema and IV solution consisting only of that lead-laced water. After all, Bob, it would only be an IQ point or two. It's not like it's the end of the world. Because Steve said, let me get this straight. Women and children shouldn't drink it, but there's nothing wrong with it. That reminds me of all the settlements with banks where they pay a fine but don't admit doing anything wrong. It's exactly that, Steve. Yeah, I can't get anything past you guys. And by the way, thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for getting us started this evening. He said, God's wrath will be upon all the homosexuals. He's working up a cabaret act, Brother Deacon Asa is. And so we go from 270 to raise this evening to 240. So thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Hopefully for other people will jump in and stand there side by side, shoulder to shoulder with you, and we'll get this taken care of. And thank you to Jean Ann for knocking it down another number. Much appreciated. Heather in Michigan, meanwhile, Rick Snyder says, he's one tough douchebag. Yeah. Some other email. Quasimoto wrote before the program started, Hillary versus Bernie is the subject line. In my opinion, Hillary is running for president because she wants to be president. Bernie is running for president because he thinks he can help the country. That's pretty profound. And earlier in the day, I heard from Bob in Texas, a longtime supporter of the community, another of those of you who step up to pick up George Soros's slack, since we still haven't gotten our stipend from the liberal overlord of the known universe. Subject line, and, you know, this started on Monday, and it's continued every night, and I believe in promoting dialogue and discussion. Bob writes, subject line, criticizing Hillary. Bob, you're right to criticize Hillary. She's a phony progressive. Compared to Bernie, she's a distant second choice. She's better than any Republican running. That's the truth. That's what you've been saying all along. Stay strong. The criticism coming your way is misinformed. Thank you, Bob. And I appreciate both sides of this discussion. Truly, truly, I do. And this came in from Dr. John on roughly the same topic. The subject line from Dr. John's note. Is. A stark example of what's right about the horn. Dr. John says, Bob, I'm catching up on the podcasts. Programs lately have been a cut above the average to me. I've had a few other people say that too. Thank you. And I noticed something interesting. It came, of all places, from the Savage Wiener, specifically that clip you played last Thursday, I believe. I remember the clip. John says, let me jump forward before moving back. I was very interested in the note from the longtime listeners, Kim and Malin, a couple, I believe, that took you to task gently and from an honest place for how they say you deal with Hillary Clinton. From my perspective, you've been consistently fair in sticking to critiques of her record. I've never detected any sexism. Bear in mind, I'm a white guy, so my privilege blinders could be concealing a lot. But I've never, ever heard you encourage anyone not to vote for her if they choose to. On the contrary, you've been consistent in the reasons you choose Sanders. And to my mind, they're based in an analysis of his record and his statements. You've discussed both candidates' records at length, and you've also spoken movingly about the rare joy of voting for someone whose ideology lines up almost exactly with your own. This is a long way of saying that you don't come across as a Bernie bro, a tag that I'm not entirely sure is anything but a media creation But now we all get what it means, if only in caricature. Despite all that, you didn't dismiss the writer's concerns. Instead, you read it plainly and then launched into a long, self-reflective discussion of its merits. That included a frank acknowledgement, which you've made before, that you will support Clinton if she's the party's nominee. Beyond that, you spoke about the very real and very ugly, decades-long smear campaign against Clinton, and even, to my ear at least, hinted that that might help explain certain of her statements and policy positions. Even more, you're one of the only people I've heard expound on the president as imperial administrator hypothesis. In short, even Bernie Sanders won't be able to govern as he might want to due to the structural position that an American president occupies. That's a powerful idea and, I think, a solid analysis of what is really possible and impossible. Now, back to the savage wiener. Savage! At one point, amid his nonsense about Scalia's death conspiracy, he stepped back and said, almost verbatim, to his audience, "It doesn't matter what I talk about, because you're deaf, dumb, and blind!" There's the difference. There's what makes the horn so valuable. Right-wingers give their audience what they want. Insults from daddy, reassurance that the world is scary and mean and beyond comprehension. Right-wingers give their audience what they want and then they break it off. Your program, on the other hand, embraces criticism, searches for valid points, hauls them out, and examines them, and then goes back to its own assumptions and examines them in light of the new, call it, evidence, I guess. The former half-assed scientist in me recognizes that. It's the time-tested way that we advance knowledge. More than that, it's welcoming to diversity, and it's definitely welcome in this media landscape. And it keeps me coming back. Signed, John. There's so much there in that note, and I love it when I get notes from you guys, not just Dr. John, but a wide variety of you. Where you really do show why our side is better at the search for knowledge than their side. We look for this stuff. We try to find it. We try to get it sorted out. After our conversation last night, and thank you so much, Dr. John, for that. Thanks for the affirmation. Little independent progressive broadcasters need some of that once in a while. It's welcome. And thanks for picking up on the... I could have gone a million years and I never would have seen what John heard in that Savage clip. Savage! Stop that. Last night I had a wonderful conversation toward the end of the program with Harry and Baldmer. And Harry followed up with some analysis and I can't share the whole email. But Harry is very, very well-read and cites to sources with the vigor of a truly seeking academic soul. One of the sources Harry cites is a professor by the name of Michael Kimmel, a professor of sociology at SUNY Stony Brook, who has led something the inquiry into something called men's studies and has written extensively on male culture. In 1996, he wrote a book called Manhood in America, A Cultural History. And Harry says the book traces the rugged American male ideology, you know, rugged in quotes, if I recall correctly, as far back as various plays written in the mid to late 1700s. Harry says, the reason I mentioned Michael Kimmel and his book on American manhood is that, as I'm sure has already occurred to you, and he said, it strikes to me as significant that the slogans coming out of the anti-government movement, because this all goes back to what a remark I made in the conversation about what are the sources of right-wing hatred of government? How can you hate government at the same time that you so proudly wave your flag and even go so far, as Billable Rick has pointed out, to get worked up over whether or not there's an eagle at the top of the staff and is that gold fringe on that flag? This isn't an embassy. You know, that kind of silliness. Harry says, it strikes me as significant that the slogans coming out of the anti-government movement also sound anti-feminist and anti-woman. One big example, the phrase, the nanny state. That slogan contains, at least to me, countless signals of hostility to women, mothers, and caregiving, which is still done predominantly, if not almost wholly, by women. That phrase is used much more frequently than, e.g., the paternal state or the parental state, or I'll add, the daddy state. The only frequent use that I would acknowledge of paternalism usually involves references to the commitment of the mentally ill and mentally disabled in our culture, as well as the mental patient rights movement of the 1970s. And that may be because paternal signifies credible or rightful authority, whereas maternal and nanny seem to allude to illegitimate authority or some kind of ancillary authority. It may also subconsciously remind men of the way in which they felt their mothers were more restrictive or more concerned about issues of behaving more politely to other people than their fathers, especially with respect to their boyhood freedoms. Do you have any idea what a treat it is to get behind the mic every night and do this? Bear witness to this kind of brain power? Harry continues, so I think the nanny state is definitely intended to arouse the opposite cultural and psychological theme of, wait, we got to have some reverb for this, rugged individualism. As well as arousing, especially among older white men, feelings or memories of being entitled to independence. The nanny state also strikes me as a definitely homophobic turn of phrase, in that, in my view, there is something subconscious connecting nanny and sissy. For example, I can think of only one widely admired male public figure of recent vintage, Winston Churchill, who was able to openly love and admire his own nanny. I think his name was Mrs. Everest, yes, and he referred to her as womb, W-O-O-M. That's what he called her from childhood, and who was not worried about being called something akin to a sissy. Harry says, I think you're absolutely correct that we need to understand fully all of the genuine roots of the American conservative, right-wing, capitalist, corporatist ideological hatred of big and or protective government. In modern history, 20th century and forward, except for Hitler's Germany, 644, who had six... Damn it, Gerald! Oh, my God! Billable Rick wrote in and took 645. You were so close, but Gerald plays to win. Or Mussolini's Italy. I cannot think of another industrial country, well, maybe North Korea, but they might not qualify as industrial, whose culture has had such a fierce strain of hatred for all things related to the protective, regulatory, or caring function of government, toward vulnerable individuals, i.e. vulnerable for any reason. But that, if you take it out and sort of turn it around and give it a good long look, yeah, the hatred of the right wing for what they call the nanny state, it's there in the word nanny. They hate nurturing. They hate the idea of a warm, embracing, caring, protective, processing. No. So naturally, if the government wants to be that way, they're going to critique it. And of course, because they're who they are, they will try to sexualize it and demean it for what they perceive as its femininity. A couple other notes. Jules, writes in and says, Legionnaire's disease, hello from Ambassador of FYI Nation. Because my case of Legionnaire's in November was so severe, I was in multi-organ shutdown when I arrived at the ER. I may never get over some of the neuro issues. The fatigue, balance, speech, and other such problems could take up to 18 months or more to correct. Jules says, I'll try to call in when you open the phones if you'd like, because I don't think people realize the severity of this disease. I'm not in Flint, but I'm about 3 hours southeast-ish in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I'm an isolated case, but I'm blessed that I was tested and treated properly. Thank you for all you do. Peace. Jules. Thank you, Jules. And, yeah, hopefully we will have that conversation. Meanwhile, just to check in elsewhere, points elsewhere, up over, down under, it's 10 a.m. and 81 degrees Fahrenheit in Sydney. Predicted high is forecast to be 100 degrees Fahrenheit. One day I hope to have air conditioning, Robert says. Damn, you need it worse than I do. And then this, from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, sweet Jeebus. I just heard that President Not Sure is vetting Governor Brian Sandoval, Republican of Nevada, for the vacant Supreme Court seat. That's absolutely true. What the fuck? Once again, progressives and liberals are being stabbed in the back. Earlier today, I heard an interview with Senator Klobuchar, guess where? Several times she repeated this meme. The tragic death of Justice Scalia. Oh, I feel kind of pukey just reading that, Ron. Ron says, could you please tell me what's tragic about the death of a nearly 80-year-old with a bad ticker? Shit, Bob, if this bastard was as healthy as a horse, his death wouldn't have been tragic. Maybe President Not Sure is playing some of that multidimensional chess, just not very well. That's 11-dimensional, Ron. P.S. Where the heck's Sandra? I've missed her trenchant observations during this election season. As have we all. I suspect Sandra is out there participating in the ongoing free market miracle that is the general American effort to, you know, keep eating and breathing and hopefully not drinking lead-poisoned water. Yeah. But it's true. It's true. That got put out into the stream of general information today. that after searching high and low for somebody, with whom he could find compromise and common cause with the Republicans, they're having a long look at two-term Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval. Sandoval has met with, allegedly, the report says, met with that iron-fisted paragon of power politics, Harry Reid. He hasn't decided whether he would accept a nomination to the Supreme Court, but he has said it would be a privilege, and has described the Supreme Court as the essence of justice in this country. And see, here's where it gets interesting. Sandoval, prior to becoming governor of Nevada, was also a federal United States, well, because, okay, Department of Redundancy Department. He was a United States District Judge in Nevada, which meant that he had previously been through the vetting process, and he'd previously actually been confirmed onto the bench by the Senate of the United States. Now, you may recall that the Senate Judiciary Committee has declared that no way, no how, nuh-uh, they're not going to let that one be all presidenty. Because Negro. Oh, but that would be some 11D-dimensional chess, wouldn't it? You sure? You sure? I'm going to give you a Republican. And then they could, well, you know how it goes. Then the Republicans would have to rethink it. But wait, he's going to give us a rock-ribbed conservative a constitutionalist. Are you sure? At which point someone in the White House can be heard. We sure fooled them. Yes, sir, we certainly fooled them. We fooled them into confirming a Republican who will do all the hateful shit that we didn't want done in the first place. Yes, sir, we sure fooled them. Boy, I tell you what, we sure threw them into the briar patch on that one. Put another one in the W column. It ain't easy being us. A note from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Someone contacted me today to get my reaction to Trump's latest win and the collective loss of the minds of at RNC headquarters and what that says about their party and our country, Carol says. It's not that I don't know how to talk prettier than a $2 whore. Obligatory Blazing Saddles reference. Mm-hmm. And, of course, well, I just happen to have that handy.
God darn it. You use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
Don't sell yourself short, Carol. It's a $20. That's like the number one versus the number two. No, but anyway, yes. But sometimes when you fought so hard to make the world a more informed, better place, all your emotions come out in a rush. So here was my response, all framed within the context of the senior prom. Oh, this is going to be good. What in the ever-living fuck did they expect? They invited those psychopath baggers to the dance, in the first place as a funny on the Democrats. Then they act shocked to find out their bagger dates came to the school dance with a fifth of cheap gin in their handbags, and when they danced tits up on the table, pantyless, the country stares aghast. What they weren't counting on was the baggers letting their criminally insane cousin Donald in the back door. They all act shocked as he takes a shit in the punch bowl and then takes the stage declaring himself the prom king, who then announces that the school principal is a secret Kenyan Muslim and the janitorial staff are all rapists. If anyone objects to him spoiling the party, he's got the football team behind him to punch people in the face, spit on them, and throw them out. Disgusted, are they? These sick-ass Republicans have snorted a pound of Peruvian flake off the nation's collective asses, nearly crashing the country, and we're the reason we can't have nice things? Dance with the ones you brung, motherfuckers. Dance with the ones you brung. Live with your decisions and take that personal responsibility. I hear so much about. The Republican National Committee got doinked by the Tea Party, and now they don't want to take responsibility for their illegitimate child, Donald J. Trump. It's about the size of it. It's ugly. I mean, Jesus, God. Betsy and the Angry Indian both pointed out to me a news story out of Nevada. Amid the chaos of the Nevada caucus were people dressed in the traditional hoods and robes of the Ku Klux Klan, holding up signs pledging their support for Donald Trump. The people in Klan clothing said they supported the New England Police Benevolent Police Association, a group that endorsed Trump in December. They were photographed by a number of attendees outside the Cimarron Memorial High School location in Las Vegas. KKK in parking lot of Cimarron High School during Republican caucus. They keep saying, "Take our country back." I've never, ever seen this in Las Vegas. I'm speechless, one eyewitness wrote on Instagram. He's theirs. He ain't ours. We didn't do that. And with all of this taken together, it's probably worth mentioning that over at Raw Story, featuring a cover photo of Hector Elizondo Mountain Dew Camacho, firing an AK-47 inside the House of Representatives, Arturo Garcia has the report of the report. It comes from The Hill, allegedly one of those respectable publications. Eaton Cohen was the co-author of Idiocracy. Earlier today, he tweeted, "I never expected Idiocracy to become a documentary." And then he went on to say, "I thought the worst thing that would come true was everyone wearing Crocs." Oddly enough, however, since way back in the earliest days of the Horn, we have said that this had to be done as a sci-fi film and a send-up of time travel movies, because you couldn't write it about the current era and have it be funny, because it would just be true. It would be a documentary. Mike Judge was interviewed by The Verge in 2014, and he said, people will email and post stuff on my Twitter that's like, hey, you predicted it, right? So that's always nice, but it's not always nice because you want the world to become a better place. Yep, we're doomed. We might as well make jokes about it. We're there. Water? You mean like from the toilet? Yeah, exactly. So we got the public service announcements part of the program out of the way in the form of this filibuster. We'll come back with prayer meeting Wednesday afterward. Or your calls if you want to, if there's stuff you want to talk about. You know, you can always reach the program to one of three ways. Well, actually more than three, but if you want to do voice, you've got the choice of Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or you've got the stress line, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Or you've got the other line, which comes in on the same computer as the Skype line, so I can't do Skype and this at the same time. Never mind. 304-574-8178. They are all available for your use. And again, thank you to Jean Ann and to Brother Deacon Asa for getting us started. We have carry the zygote. $235 to go in fundraising for this evening. So let's take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, I will be her raft if she's ready for flow. Oh, Mississippi, she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Back water, keep rolling on fast, just the same.
Oh, back water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi, moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, back water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi, moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, back water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi, moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
I want a honky-tonk, honky-tonk, pretty mama, honky-tonk with you all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
I want a honky-tonk, honky-tonk, pretty mama, honky-tonk with you all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
Seemed appropriate. Yeah, 5 minutes past the hour with the whole water issues and everything. Yeah, the Doobie Brothers. But you knew that. It's the old DJ part. You got to tell them who it was. But you know what? There's people out there who don't know that's the Doobie Brothers. That's the thing. That's the thing about getting older. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And we will go straight away to the phones. Both lines have callers on them. We will go first to Roger in Minnesota on the stress line. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm getting better. I just been through helping my daughter through a week and a half in the hospital, undergoing major surgery, and got her home now and doing a real full-time sort of nursing job. That's pretty exciting. But that's that. There's that and the recovery from dealing with our country's completely perversely disordered health system. But that's a conversation perhaps for another time, unless you really want to grab it and dig in.
Let's go where you wanted to go, and yeah, we'll have that conversation another day.
Well, good. Let's do. I am gobsmacked, stunned, and fucking pissed off because, you know, I figured out quite a long time ago in my analysis of 11-dimensional chess behaviors on the part of our president, that ain't the game he's playing.
So not a big fan of 11-dimensional chess? Or well, you're saying it ain't even that?
Not when it ain't even 1-dimensional chess.
Oh, way to pick up the theme and run with it, Roger. I'm proud.
Only one, you know, here's the deal. I first of all, you damn well bet you this is a situation where the Republicans thought this shit out and they came on with a strong offensive with this presumptive behavior around, oh, you can't nominate someone to the Supreme Court. And basically, we got a OSMR from the president along the lines of, you know what, I'm going to jump right in your briar patch, and I didn't even see that that's what that was, because I'm going to give you just what you want, and after all, that's what you were after anyway, wasn't it?
Hey, well, yeah, we can't be upsetting. We haven't even lived under anything remotely resembling a Supreme Court. A liberal Supreme Court in a generation. So imagine all the things that corporate America might see go sideways if that actually happened.
Well, it would be a different situation from the one that we've been enduring in many ways. The calculus that I figure, if you want to call it calculus, the president might be operating on is kind of obvious. Something along the lines of, well, we'll throw them a nominee that they're either going to reject and look like idiots about, or they're going to accept, in which case they'll take it away from us as a campaign issue, which is what he's failing to note, is that They'll probably just, if they throw him this, I'm sorry, if he throws them this type of nominee, they're going to say, yum, and they're going to snap it up and confirm the guy.
Well,
thereby taking a potential embarrassment away from the Republicans. But you know what the side benefit of this is for the Republicans, having successfully gotten the briar patch situation the way they want it? People are going to be so pissed off at what Obama did around the Supreme Court that Democrats are going to refuse to vote for whoever it is that he happens to endorse.
Oh, you are playing 11-dimensional chess.
Yes. If he presents a nominee like this, they're going to confirm him or her. It's perfect.
Oh, let's run off another one of those tangles for a minute. Because I'm wondering in the White House if they're not betting. They know. They can't not know, can they, Roger, what reality they live in.
Oh, they might not know. Come on now. Haven't you been watching?
Because I'm thinking that they think that Harry Reid and Chuck Grassley and the rest of the birthers, deathers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, and, you know, the toenail toothpick society, that their hatred of Obama and all things Obama will supersede, so that they might even get a little mini revolution in their ranks, especially among the not particularly well situated Republican members of the Senate who are up for re-election. You see what I mean?
But don't you think that they're going to get a real good chuckle out of having snookered the president into nominating exactly what they want?
If they can get past the ODS aspect of it, Obama derangement syndrome, yeah, they'll laugh all the way to the bank.
But can't they sell the humor of the thing to the people with the ODS?
No, because ODS, the first part of the brain that ODS attacks is the humor center.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got ODS, you are in a perpetual state of outrage. If Obama is photographed saving a kitten from a burning tree, if you've got ODS, you don't say, "Oh, good, the kitten got saved." You say instead, "See, that Kenyan Muslim socialist, you slurper, done saved that kitten, and it's probably got some noxious disease. And what was he trying to burn a tree down for?"
Well, I can just imagine thousands of burning kittens hanging from trees all across the South.
Sadly, yes. I mean, the example that I use is, to the best of my knowledge, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is up for re-election in Alabama this year. And I'm just, look, I mean, the people who are already, and you know, there are progressive people in Alabama. Don't kid yourself. I know them. I'm hooked in with
Bob,
a bunch of them.
Bob, euthanasia, you know, sometimes.
Well, but the thing is, they weren't going to vote for Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III anyway. But the Republican base in Alabama has, you know, like stage Avogadro's number ODS. And so, you know, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III can just say, "I'm a stand fast against any appointment of that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, in our White House, because freedom and family values." And they'll all go, just, "God bless you, the South will rise again."
Well, allow me to do a little bit of brain science postulating here.
You postulate away, Roger.
The humor center, I would suggest, is a somewhat bifurcated matter. There's the type of humor that is the laughter when you recognize the irony of our common plight. And then humor is a healthy response to say, geez, life's tough, and it has its ironies, and this is our healthy way of processing a little bit of that frustration. That's one side. But the other side is mean-ass venality, where people get a lot of fun off of the pain of others. It's a very different kind of humor. It's humor that's vicious, that's at the expense of, that usually contains little irony or any kind of room for thought. And I think that side of the humor center probably still, the mean ass part.
Oh, you're talking about what
exists among the ODS people.
This may actually predate your joining the Horn FCC. What you're talking about is the Stump Licker Bunch, Roger.
Uh-huh.
Back in the day, when you did your molasses making. You have to skim it as you boil it and everything, and you take all that nasty skimmings, and you dump it over in an old hollowed-out stump,
mm-hmm.
and you just leave it there, and it gets all full of dead yellow jackets and stuff like that, and people will drink it after it ferments because it is sweet after all.
Oh my God!
And that's stump liquor, and it'll make you crazier than Cooter Brown. And
it would have all kinds of ketones and acetones and
absolutely.
Great substances.
In other words, delicious.
Aldehydes, who knows what.
Right, and it makes you crazy and mean.
I bet.
And I've described the right wing in this country as the Stump Licker Bunch. They're whacked out of their brains on this stuff, and they think there's nothing funnier than watching some goddamn liberal with a tambourine and kumbaya on his breath come up and say, "Brother, can't I reach across the aisle, and can't we compromise?" And they say, "Sure, we can compromise," and they punch him in the face, kick him in the nuts, knock him to the ground, and stomp a mud hole in him the whole time that they laughing their asses off.
Right. So, you see, that kind of triumphant, hateful humor center, I would suggest, as you're pointing out, does still exist among this ODS crowd.
It's all
and
there
don't
is.
Don't you think that the Republican manipulators can figure out how to appeal to that side and make Obama look all the dumber?
How hard will they have to work? I mean, the for-profit media will do it for them. You know, Joe and Mika will do it for
good
them.
God.
The people on that goddamn couch over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda will do that for them. They won't. The RNC won't even have to send out a blast fax.
Well, Bob, I just had to call with my analysis of what I perceive as 1D-dimensional chess. My back of the napkin with a crayon. Analysis of this matter, and throw my 1 cent in.
Your 1 cent is well received, and I think it actually appreciated in value over the course of the conversation, Roger.
Excellent. Have a good evening.
All right, you too, and seriously, all our best hopes for continued recovery for your daughter.
Yeah, her name is Shayana.
Shayana?
Shayana. She's a very special person. She's tough as nails.
Wonderful.
And she'll be
good.
Fine.
Good. I'm glad to know it. Y'all take
right.
care.
Shout out to everyone.
See you, Roger. Bye now.
Right, bye.
In Minnesota, our buddy Roger, with far more than a penny's worth. And meanwhile, out in Talibandiana, let's check in with Jules. Hey, Jules.
Hello. How are you tonight? I'm Bob.
Well, just welcome aboard.
Very well. I'm calling because, as you read my email to you, I had Legionnaires back in November, and there's been an outbreak in Flint, Michigan. There have also been outbreaks in smaller outbreaks in California and New York, also in Illinois. And this is not a very common disease, fewer than 20,000 cases normally in the United States. So, you know, it's really unusual.
It is, but once you've been near it, you suddenly find you feel a compulsion to find out everything you can about it, don't you?
Yeah, it's pretty much like other things, and I gained an interest in it mainly not so much because I've had it, but because of the outbreaks in Flint, really. 10 out of 87 cases, that's not, have died. Those aren't very good odds.
Well, no, that's 10 dead and 87 more. So it's actually 97.
Yeah, exactly. And up to 30% of people who have it, will pass away.
It's terrifying. And so now you mentioned that your case, Jules, was a sort of a one-off. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I was a very isolated case in my area. There weren't any other reported cases, so I didn't know that I had had it until I got a call out of nowhere from the Indiana State Health Department, and they were like, "We received your." your blood cultures back and you had lesion errors back in November. And I was like, I had what? And they were like, you had lesion errors disease. And I'm like, excuse me, what? You know, because I hadn't been informed this. Well, I hadn't been to see the pulmonologist yet, because I hadn't had the follow-up with him yet. So it was a shock to me, and I didn't know anything about Legionnaires' disease because I'd been in the hospital 2 weeks, about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and I'd been in there for about 2 weeks, and I hadn't really heard it. There wasn't any information at all about it at that point in time about the outbreak in Flint, so. I was like, okay, and so what is this about? So, I was rather shocked, and when I started reading about it, I was like, oh, wow, this is, interesting. And the more I dug and the more I found out about Flint, I was really shocked. I ended up back in the hospital December 26th for another week and a half. Well, no, for about a week. I got out... in time to do the New Year's Eve special on FYI.
Having lived through the reality and the gravity of it, Jules, are you personally shocked, offended, anything along those lines by the knowledge that Rick Snyder's government, not too far away from you in Michigan, is just sitting there saying, oh, well.
One of the reasons why I emailed you was because I've been wanting to do this when you brought it up, and it just so happens that I felt up to it this evening, and I had the opportunity to, is because I am extremely angry about it. I mean, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, and I'm going to try to hit, Mike Malloy, and I know it's hard to get into Hartman, but I'm going to try to hit as many people as I can. I do a small program on FYI Nation, that I've been on sabbatical for, since November because of this whole thing. Because I am extremely angry. Not only the death rate from the Legionnaires, but this is a disease that a lot of people do go in when they you pretty much are hospitalized with. So if you don't have insurance, you end up with these very large bills, or many people are underinsured, so they still end up with these very large hospital bills.
Right. And meanwhile, this is a disease that we've known about since what, the 80s, the Reagan 80s?
Mm-hmm.
And we've isolated the bacterium.
Yes.
Legionella is what they named it.
Yep.
And we don't. Because we live in never ever America, we haven't figured out a way to eradicate it.
Yeah, exactly. Not only that, but it has lasting symptoms. These survivors are going to need continued care. Many times, and I would like to see the severity of the patients. You know, I would be interested in seeing the severity of the patients, because the more severe the disease in the patient, the more severe the residual effects, so to speak. And like with me, I was conscious, which is really, really freaky. I mean, I totally, like, freaked everyone out, because my sodium was ridiculously low. I should have been in a coma by that point. And actually, they did induce a coma with me. I was in an induced coma for a week, almost a week.
Well, what the dear friend of mine, and it's no big secret, she'll tell anybody that she had it, my colleague in the struggle against mountaintop removal, Nanette, she was in a coma, and she was months and months and months and months getting back from it. The first time I saw her after she had begun her recovery, she was weak as a kitten and walking on a cane. And I don't mean to make this sound bitter, but I want to live in a country, Jules, where all diseases like this are taken in earnest. I mean, where's the Legionnaires' disease campaign that's bringing in a bajillion dollars a year and headed by a multimillionaire salaried executive director, and everybody's walking around with little ribbons on their chest? I don't know, seen as it often is associated with water, maybe the rough approximation of the color of bong water. Where is that campaign?
Well, I mean, any type of these bacterial diseases or, you know, viral diseases that should have been eradicated for the most part. And my concern is even the survivors, the residual effects. There was a study done in I think it was Norway, and it was done on 122 survivors. It was a long-term study over 17 months. At the end of the 17 months, symptoms, the 75% of the patients still had fatigue, neurological symptoms such as problems with malaise, there were 75% of the patients, neuromuscular symptoms such as joint pain and muscular weakness, 79%, and you know, this goes on and on. There can be continued cognitive problems, issues with balance, and other such problems lasting forever, basically, for people in situations like mine, and your friend who was in a coma, who had who were so severe that they actually reached this point. And what I'm, you know, saying with these outbreak cases, like in California, New York, and Illinois, and Flint, especially Flint, because it was such a high number, these survivors are going to need ongoing care for such a long time that they're going to need, you know, they're going to have medical bills. They're going to need in-home care in some cases. When I came home after the first 2 weeks, I couldn't stand up by myself. I needed someone to help me stand up. I was so weak. There are still times I have trouble getting up. I mean, I would fall, and I could not get up off the floor by myself. It was just, it was horrible. I'm still using it's a walker with wheels. It's called a Rollator. On occasion, I can use a cane sometimes, which I had a series of strokes about 8 years ago. I was 37 years old. It's just a fluky thing. But so I had to use a cane occasionally then, too.
Well, I mean, were they, Jules, were they ever able to tell you where you got it?
And my case is really, really odd. I had done some gardening. About a week before or 2 weeks before I started really getting symptoms. And you can get it from the soil. It's very, very unusual, but if you breathe in very, very small microscopic soil part, well, it actually gets mixed in with water, and it's water particles that have, you know, bacteria from soil. You can get it that way. And that's what they think happened with me.
Amazing. There's all kinds of dangerous little critters out there. I mean, you know, we're seeing it with Zika now.
And that's another thing, you know, we're not getting, you know, enough coverage on.
Well, right, and see, that's one of those larger issues of living in a giant nation state that is governed by people who don't believe in government, Jules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, have the occasional bridge collapse into the occasional river with the occasional 150 cars on it or something like that, because that'll get the for-profit media out lickety-split. I mean, they get to use their fancy helicopters and stuff. But, you know, crumbling roads, schools that are just going to hell in a handbasket. But it's all down on the micro level. Yeah, we're not prepared in this country, Jules. We are not prepared for any sort of significant disease outbreak. And the only answer of the right wing is to, thoughts and prayers, pray to Jesus. Because big government can't help ye. Sorry, I have to go into the stupid cornpone accent every time, but that's what I think of.
No, you're right, and the thing is that you do that, and it does signify significant meaning, because the most significant, the largest group of people that are affected by these things are the poor and underprivileged, and you do that, and it kind of does signify those people that are living in these areas that are underprivileged, and folks that are in lower income, underprivileged areas that have you know, are not,
well, I mean, if you, if
education,
you're,
and stuff, don't have the same language skills as people who have higher education.
Absolutely, and it becomes a perfect storm, because if you are low income and undereducated and underemployed, you're probably also eating a diet that consists primarily of you pretty much staying in the Piggly Wiggly ramen noodle aisle. And, you know, maybe you're getting that dollar a day in food stamps. Don't eat it all in one place. And so, and you probably, depending on where you are in this country, you don't have health care. And so all of those things combine to make sure that by the time you do go to the hospital with something like this, the thing has already advanced to the point that you may well be screwed.
Exactly. I did a program, actually, a rather in-depth program. My commentary was a little over an hour, much like your filibuster. It was a little over an hour discussing how we are keeping our lower income, lower socioeconomic classes down, and causing them to have more problems with their being able to comprehend logical solutions to various
issues. Well, not just keeping them down, Jules, but down and out. There are certain aspects of this. God knows it's inescapable when you look at a place like Flint or Jackson, Mississippi, if you consider the population dynamics. It's impossible not to look at this as having elements of, dare I say it, what's the 90s term we used? Ethnic cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
Or genocide.
Yeah, well, it causes a lot of cognitive dysfunction, and there's a lot of different reasons. I'll have to send you the program, and perhaps we can discuss it at some point, because it has, you talk about Appalachia and the cancers and stuff that develop. Well, there's so many other factors that are involved with that, and there's probably close to a dozen different factors that are involved with that that also feed into the cognitive dysfunction, and really that feeds into the system because it keeps our government from functioning well, essentially.
Indeed. Well, I've enjoyed this conversation immensely.
I don't want to keep everyone else from getting in.
No. You're doing fine. But I really appreciate you bringing some more insight to this, because it heightens the sense of urgency that apparently everybody but Rick Snyder feels, or everybody but Republicans in Michigan feel.
Not only for the Legionnaires, but also for the. For the lead poisonings, because the children that are being affected are going to need ongoing care. What you've brought up about the increase in crime is going to be a huge factor, and Flint can't afford an increase in crime.
No community can.
No, but this community... no community can, but this is already a community that has been hard hit.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, Jules, they're not going to worry about it until the zombie lead poisoned hordes start marching down into Grosse Pointe.
Yeah.
And becoming a problem for the well-to-do white people.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy to see and hear and read these sorts of things, and to have to comprehend my country the way that I do as a function of a fact-based reality. I mean, but there's no getting around the economic and ethnic aspects to these problems, because for some reason or another, it just always works out that the toxic waste dump is never next to a mansion community. The disease outbreak never seems to break out in the Tony neighborhoods.
No, they don't.
So how do you avoid the conclusion that it's not just tolerated but accepted? At the risk of taking the next step over into Alex Jones' world, that it's not some sort of grand conspiracy against the poor, the black, the other. I mean, I think back to the story out of the Flint crisis about people having to show government IDs in order to get water.
Which meant
that the undocumented immigrant community weren't going to get no water. A pretty picture. Not a pretty picture, Jules. Well, I thank you very kindly, and I hope you have a lovely evening. And I trust your recovery is coming along, and I hope it continues to that you continue to improve.
I'm a very strong and determined woman. I'm on Skype a lot, doing care calls. I was the DRE at my local Unitarian Universalist congregation for about 5 years before I had to stop working due to some other things going on in my life. I have autoimmune issues, so Yeah, I've carried that over into my second life, so to speak. One thing, one of the people in our chat room said to remind folks that it's not just people without insurance that suffer, it's people with insurance that are...
They're getting alive by their deductibles. And
yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You just said the magic word, Unitarian. Tim from L.A. said, Jules is a you like me? I like her.
Yeah.
Tim wants to know, where are you from originally?
California, actually. When I had the series of strokes, it caused problems with my speech center. So I technically have foreign accent syndrome. So my speech goes in and out from, I kind of have, I'll sometimes sound like I have an accent and sometimes I don't. It just kind of depends on how tired I am or whatnot. We've had a bad weather system come through, so I'm a little off tonight.
Okay, well, I thank you for the information. You know, you mentioned UU, and my immediate thought every time I hear it is, wow, the only church I could actually attend, and they are never going to build one anywhere near me.
Yeah. My programming was anywhere. I had people practicing Buddhism, Hinduism. I had some Wiccans. I had some earth-based spirituality. I had some ex-Catholics, ex-Lutherans. I had some atheists.
Tim said, you are free to come back to California. We have Medi-Cal.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, and have a lovely evening. I look forward to our next conversation, Jules.
Well, I look forward to the rest of the program. Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. Jules calling from Talibandiana. And a note coming in from Barbie. Hi, Barbie. Did you know the VA Medical Center tested positive for Legionnaires last year in Iowa City? They treated the water and are goddamned lucky no one contracted it. They said they routinely test hospitals, but it had been 3 years since they tested. The only reason I believe they tested was because of all the Ebola hype. They were very, very lucky. Thanks, Barbie. Yeah, isn't that a shame that a country with the wealth of the United States has to be lucky instead of being diligent? Diligence is good. And these are all things that we could do. I know it's easy to say it ain't rocket science or it's not like going to the moon. But we are afflicted with a political disease in this country that makes something like just having the money to constantly be testing and retesting and making sure that noxious diseases don't bloom in hospitals, et cetera, it makes it damn near impossible. Because a government that responds to the needs of its people is anathema to the Chuck and Dave Cokes and the anarcho-Randian capitalist types, the Somalia with cable people. And I don't understand what goes on in the human brain that makes you want that. I mean, wouldn't maybe we finally wind up on one of those happiness indices of countries if we were actually looking toward for the best interests of the American people? Because it seems to me like it would. Meanwhile, a note from Ron in the frozen north. Good evening from the country whose motto is peace, order, and good government. We're not sure that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is going to work out all that well, so we're going to stick with our boring motto for a while longer. We'll get back to you if we change our mind. Peace, order, good government. No, it really it doesn't make you want to run down to the tattoo parlor and get that inked onto your ass or anything. But if it's as an operating philosophy, it seems pretty fine. But of course, I say that at the same time that I have to add the caveat that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, is not what we have been told it means. You would have to kind of go deep. You'd go maybe go deep diving into Dr. Bill's files to get a complete breakdown of that. But suffice to say that a conscious choice was made to reject the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. Because, no. And then there's the whole meaning of happiness, which in Enlightenment terms of the late 18th century referred to a state of community happiness, the well-being of a community. It comes out of the communitarian spirit, that we're all better off when our community group is better off. Now, speaking of happiness indices, guess who's dead last? And thanks for letting me know, Ron. Guess who's dead last for happiest state in America? Yeah, right. Yeah, of course, West Virginia. And among cities, guess who's dead last for happy cities in the United States? Why, hello, state capital of West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia, sitting there on the banks of the Great Kanawha River, where things like methylchlorohexane methanol get dumped 10,000 or more gallons at a time into the water supply. Yeah, that's right. All that peace, order, and good government stuff is striking a chord. Barbie says, "Ron, y'all got room for me up there?" There's lots of room up there. Tons of room. I mean, what, 40, 50 million people up there, Ron? Yeah, plenty of room. And after all, Barbie, you're a little bit of howling winds and brutal ass temperatures doesn't faze you in the least. And I'm beginning to think that if we wind up with President T-Rump, I may have to just figure out a way to deal with it too. Scary. Damn scary. So, both lines are open, as is the Skype line, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, if you want to engage in the conversation. Ah, okay, 34 million, Ron says. We got room till hell won't have it. And lovely little communities, too. And some of them actually further south. Well, I mean, you know, there's parts of Ontario that are a hell of a lot further south than, say, you know, Maine. Yeah, right. So there we go. Yes, Barbie, I agree. Barbie types in the writes in that distilled, no bullshit sort of Midwestern way. We are in hell. Yeah. Oh, do you remember the story last night about how Mumbling Ben Carson said that the President of the United States isn't black enough? Now, remember, this is the same Ben Carson who compared him with, I'm sorry, you can't win twice in an evening. Compared him to Hitler and Nazis and all that. Yeah. Well, still, he's not black enough. Guess who jumped in to defend Mumbling Ben Carson, or at least to agree with him? Why, yes, it's unindicted co-conspirator Daryl Issa on CNN.
Tone of this particular campaign, and a lot of this remains to be seen. You make a compelling case. But here's an example, a piece of evidence, if you will, about the state of play within your party right now. Dr. Ben Carson said on a podcast, I believe, talking about the sitting president of the United States, Barack Obama, you know, he's an African-American, but he was, you know, raised white. Many of his formative years were spent in Indonesia. So for him to, you know, claim that, you know, he identifies with the experience of black Americans is a bit of a stretch. Is this the kind of tactic that your party should endorse? In the Politico podcast, he didn't say this in the back of a car to a friend. He said it to an open audience.
Well, you know, I know the doctor. He spoke before a charity that I'm also involved in. He is a great surgeon, a wonderful human being. And he was technically correct in what he said. But again, this is the reason that political loose talk by people who are just beginning to do it is always a problem in real statesmanship. The fact is that.
Yeah, right. Because Daryl Issa, now he's an expert in loose talk and political statesmanship. And yeah, this happened yesterday on CNN's Newsday. That was Andrew Cuomo interviewing him. Because I've got some more Daryl Issa. And I was just waiting for that part where he said, of course, Ben Carson is correct. Because how do you... How do you raise a black child white? I mean, do you just take the that white liquid nurse's shoe polish and just cover him from head to toe every morning before you send him out to school? It's necessary, son, because we're raising you white. And just what does that mean at all? Within the context of, oh my God, what a racist thing to say. Ah, yeah, he was raised white. Free range, cruelty free, artisanal quail. It's not like that church in South Carolina. Yeah, remember that story from last night? Yeah. Timson found that for me, and it turns out, even though it had not been attributed where I read it. Of course, it came from the New York Times, which is fully in the tank for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. It is, in a black church in South Carolina, Bernie Sanders struggles to get an amen, by Yamiche Alcindor. It was Yamiche Alcindor who wrote, Mr. Sanders delivered remarks at a microphone next to a buffet table offering chicken, collard greens, and dinner rolls. Jesus. But no, I don't know what that means to me. And because of issues of privilege, I never realized I was being raised white. I never realized I was being raised straight. And of course, this goes hand in hand with those other bullshit semi-eugenic theories of the right wing that suggest things like, well, you know, being a homosexual is a curse. You get up one morning and you think, I'm tired of being all straight and godly and having and being inclined to having sex with women folk. Today I'm going to go out and put a man in my mouth. Doesn't work that way. I miss Bart Kopp. The first time I ever read where he said he looked forward to, or maybe he was writing about Ted Haggard, and he said, there he was out there, there he was, protecting traditional family values, marriage, until he woke up one morning with a man in his mouth. Yes. But again, Daryl Issa, unindicted co-conspirator. Yeah, look it up. Daryl Issa is worried about, you know, people who are just new to this process, who go out there and say things that are true, you know, like Obama was raised white. Jesus, I can't even say. I got to take a break every time I say the job. What the fuck? No. But of course, that was true. And but it you know, these people that are new to the political process, sometimes they'll just say things that that maybe ought not be said in the way that they were said, even if they're true. And well, do you have any more explanation or examples, perhaps, representing ISA, maybe?
It doesn't. There is little we can do if this president ignores the law in a timely fashion. Our process is to go to the court. The court is likely not to rule quickly. And just as when, and it's an old example, but Andy Jackson, the founder of the Democratic Party, if you will, in the Trail of Tears, defied the Supreme Court and marched Native Americans to their death.
Well, if you will, I won't, Daryl Issa. No, I won't. Because, I mean, we did have that slave-owning Jefferson fella as well, because that's what the Democrat. Yes, yeah. But no, Daryl Issa.
You dick!
I won't. But did you catch that? Because we sort of just blew by it. So the context of all of this, which if I was a multi-millionaire, sure-fired for-profit media journalist, I would probably have set up before we ran the clip, is that he was being interviewed on, Daryl Issa was, on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda in regard to the desire of the President of the United States of America, who will continue to be President of the United States of America till January the 20th, 2017, much to the chagrin of Daryl Issa and others like him, indicted and unindicted co-conspirators and non-conspirators, just, you know, the whole panoply of the GOP world. He's upset that we might finally close our concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay, because it's a concentration camp. You know, everybody's of a single religion there. It comes generally from a single region of the earth. It's a concentration camp. They're just put in there forever. So they die there. They don't get fair trials. Constitution's out the window. It's a concentration camp. And something that should have happened 7.5 years ago, 7 years and 2 months, whatever, it might finally happen. It should happen. And the people that we have actually convicted of crimes, like, you know, none, should go to prisons. But instead, the plan is we'll just take the people that we were going to warehouse there for the rest of their natural born days anyway, and we'll stick them in federal prisons all over the country. Up with this, Daryl Issa will not put. And that's why he said,
and ignores the law in a timely fashion. Our process is to go to the court. The court is likely not to rule quickly. And just as when, and it's an old example, but Andy Jackson, the founder of the Democratic Party, if you will, in the Trail of Tears, defied the Supreme Court and marched Native Americans to their death. The fact is, it is very hard to stop a president from doing something if he's willing to ignore the law and his oath.
You know, what about the importance of the naval base? Do you see any dynamic changing with whether or not we continue?
Yeah, oh, shut up, Blondie. Because I don't know her name. She's just another one of those Fox Attack blondes. And I would call that person Blondie were he a he or a she. In this case, it happens to be a woman. No, it's not a sexist thing. It's just a, you know, it's a dye job thing. Did you get that? Now, remember, Daryl Issa said, you know, these people who are new to the process, sometimes they'll say unfortunate things that, although true, create controversy. Well, Daryl Issa's been sucking at the federal teat for quite some time now, and I can't explain the people in Southern California who keep sending him to Congress. I'd kind of like to look at him and go, what are you thinking? But no, he just compared closing a concentration camp with the deliberate genocidal forced removal of indigenous persons. You got that? You know, because freedom or something. Now, what makes it extra creepy is that along the way, Daryl Issa engaged in a little soupçon of, sedition. Remember, the Trail of Tears was only possible, the murder of those Native Americans was only possible, because the military obeyed an order in violation of the U.S. Supreme Court. So do I believe that the military may push back on the president if he's given an unlawful order? Actually, I do. I can see the flag officers resigning rather than obeying a clearly unlawful order. Are they going to obey an unlawful order? An unlawful order to move people from Guantanamo? An unlawful order to close the base? I'm just asking questions here. I'm not suggesting that they do or anything. And as Carol Baker notes, the hissies are happening all over the country. The state of Kansas Stan is having a conniption over the idea that one of those would be put in Leavenworth. Oh, really? Leavenworth. And you know, I guess we can't put them in the Supermax in Florence, Colorado, because they'd use their Muslin usurper ray to just, I don't know, tunnel out or something. Are you? It gets embarrassing after a while, doesn't it? This idea of every time we need to do something, that there's a Republican standing there going, "No, we can't." I mean, we're exceptional and everything, but we're not that exceptional. We gotta have help going potty. These damn zippers are baffling me. Whatever happened to them good old buttons we used to have? Back when America was great again. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Heading over to the phones in a minute. Barbie says, you know, Bob, I'm feeling the burn more and more tonight. I know. And a lot of people are. You know how we know? Because sleaze merchants like David Brock. God, I at one point in time, I thought he really had turned over a new leaf. At one point in time, I thought he really had changed and tried to be a better person than he was back when he was just sliming Anita Hill because he could. But a tiger never changes his spots. Right? No. So for some reason or another, Time Magazine reached out and interviewed David Brock after the Nevada caucuses. And we briefly spoke about what happened there in the instance where Dolores Huerta accused a Bernie Sanders supporter or supporters of yelling English only at her, remembering, of course, that this woman is a hardcore committed partisan of the Clinton campaign and has in fact accepted something like $100,000 from that campaign from the Clintons or the Clinton Foundation or whatever. But that thing, they were trying, the Hilarians were trying to get this to go around the world before the truth could get its shoes on. But they got caught, because there's no real evidence that anybody was yelling English only, or that anybody who was, wasn't a Bernie supporter. But that didn't stop the for-profit media. So, time, decided to interview David Brock about it. And Time wrote an intro to the interview in which it said, "All the pushback on misleading news reports that Bernie Sanders won the Latino vote, he didn't in Nevada. Trackers following Sanders, catching his every gaffe, like when he yelled English only into a mic at a Nevada event, or push polling showing Clinton winning among African Americans in South Carolina, those all come from Brock." In other words, Time says that David Brock says that, no, not a Bernie Sanders supporter yelled English only, which was a goddamn lie in the first place, but that Bernie Sanders himself yelled English only into a microphone. Mm-hmm. Now, they then turned around and did a little covering. They edited the post, and it's all the pushback on misleading news reports that Bernie Sanders won the Latino vote. He didn't in Nevada. Trackers following Sanders, catching his every gaffe, or push polling showing Clinton winning amongst African Americans in South Carolina. Those all come from Brock. Lord God. And, I mean, there's not even, they're not even trying anymore. The so-called establishment and their mouthpieces in the for-profit media, not even trying anymore. And by God, they got plenty of time to cover T-Rump out there whipping up the nasty little proto-fascist undercurrent that runs through this country. But how did that get past an editor? Ah, screw it. Hey, let's go over and talk to Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know, man?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the Trump thing, the coverage on the, you know, the liberal MSNBC, and it was like they were. It seems like it seems like the people doing the coverage couldn't even hide their, it was just quite an accomplishment, but they seemed to be happy, almost like they were trapped inside an orgasmatron for a week or something, you know? But the thing I was calling about, oh, you didn't get that joke, but anyway.
No, I got it. I smiled broadly.
A little Woody Allen reference from the early 70s, but like yesterday, and this might be hitting you away, but I don't know if you saw the weather. We had like, I think it was like 9 funnel clouds and about 5 touchdowns yesterday in the weather.
Yeah, 3 people dead in the deep south?
Yeah, 1 in Louisiana and 2 in, I think one of the states moved up. Seemed like it was headed towards you somewhere, but hopefully, you know, the land will take some of the
wind. Oh, we had some wind whipping around the eaves here.
But the other thing was, I noticed, of course, that I was watching, you know, because right around when your show was going on, right around 5, that's when the funnel clouds weren't that far from where I'm located, and it was, I didn't see any, so that's always good. But an hour or two after that, the news, because, you know, the news just loves natural disasters. You ever notice that? Is that just me?
Oh, no, that's not just you.
Or anything where people get really screwed up or people get hurt and damaged, and they like that.
Well, I mean, you know, Don Henley said it oh so well so long ago, the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Yeah.
I hate to laugh, but you got to laugh.
Well, no, it's an old staple in little TV newsrooms all around the country. If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, and But it's like after the main part of it, because I think we're under tornado warning. There's actually a watch, which is like real. I mean, that's like next to the tornadoes right there, but none were here. And then a tornado warning till about 10 central time. So I was watching the local news coverage, and then you had like the obligatory poor guy lost his house or trailer home, got destroyed by a tornado. Then the obligatory, well, Jesus saved me kind of response.
That's this being Wednesday and all, we can bring this up. It's one of the uglier aspects of Christianity, you know, that business of praying tornadoes away, you know, onto somebody else.
Yeah, we didn't exactly say that, but it was implied in a statement that.
No, as Mark Twain observed in the war prayer, that's implicit in every prayer they pray for, you know, something, is that because, you know, prayer is a zero-sum game.
Yeah, it either works or it doesn't.
Well, not just that. It's, you know, if Twain said, if you're praying for rain for your crops, you may be praying a damn deluge onto somebody who doesn't need them.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and also just to kind of touch, like yesterday I was thinking I was trying to call in, but I don't know, my phone was messing up. But I was thinking yesterday when I was listening to you about the difference between, listening to the radio and watching TV. I think there's actually a big difference in that, you know, and it's like when I listen to Malloy's show after yours, I generally do not watch it on the computer. I just listen to it, you know, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, don't you use different parts of your brain if you're just listening as opposed to watching?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And from a technical standpoint, I almost always just listen to the audio anyway.
Yeah.
Because of bandwidth issues here.
I just noticed that the other day. Because, you can watch it, but I don't know. I just seem to find more when I'm going back to, I guess, the 20s and 30s when, radio came out. It's just more informed, maybe I pick up more. I think I do. It's, just better like that. So I guess you're not going to be getting a TV camera in the bus or something.
Well, I actually, there's a plan out there. But it's a rather extensive plan. I just don't see any purpose in pointing a static camera at my mug and having people watch me talk. I mean, that's like, from my, I'm not in love with my own visage, and as such, I figure it's got to be about as engaging as watching paint dry. Whereas I think it's a more engaging experience to just go with the audio. Now, if we could ever raise the money to build out the studio, I mean, I've sketched up, and if there's somebody out there who's a member of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, who's skilled in things like drafting, Dogman in South Carolina says, I vote no camera, imagination. Yeah, please, yes, absolutely. But if somebody out there knows how to do like architectural drafting and stuff, I'd welcome the help, because what I would love to do is if we were ever do video, the audio stream would never go away, because it's its own thing. But to do video and have like multiple cameras, three or four cameras, multiple angles, and instead of just watching me sit in a chair and talk, instead to be able to be up and mobile and moving around and have a desk to sit at, or a couch or a chair or whatever, or you know, the thing, you know, stuff to play with, buttons to push and bells to ring and shit like that. That would be fun. And also to be able to use that technology, say, with Skype, for instance, and considering the number of mentions they get, we really should have they really should be paying us. But that ain't going to happen. But with Skype, to be able to do a split screen. And when, say, if you, Jim, were to use Skype and call in, we could see your mug next to my mug. And that would probably tickle a lot of people. To see the people that are actually members of the community with whom they feel like they've established such a bond in the first place.
Yeah, it's weird you should mention that, because I mean, even though I only talk to people on the Skype line and, you know, and heard people speak on the phone, I feel as though I kind of know them more. I can identify with, particularly I noticed over the Twitter, and the Skype thing, that, you know, you kind of get an identity, you feel like you know them after a while. Because I noticed when I was first on the Malloy thing, I mean, get on your Skype, but one Skype at a time. But I noticed, when I go into the room, it's like, you know, people, I recognize people, they recognize me, and it's a camaraderie, there's a group, community. I must have the communion thing. But so, all right. Well, I'll let you go. I'll let somebody
all right.
else.
Good hearing from you, Jim. And hopefully it will be a quiet tornado season down that way. But I got a feeling it ain't gonna.
Actually, it's not. I mean, we're not. I mean, thank goodness I don't live in. You know, Kansas, not necessarily just Kansas, but the Tornado Alley part, that's more Oklahoma, in that area.
Not anymore. Not anymore. No.
Yeah. Well, okay, five puts us into the running. Okay.
All right. Take it easy,
disconnect.
Jim. All right. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. 17 minutes past 8, and we're kind of stuck fundraising wise. We are at $235 to raise to keep out of the hole this evening. One at 235, 10 at 23, 23 at 10, and yeah, I hate the odd numbers. Damn it! But all help is great help, and it is sincerely appreciated. The PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And, of course, the mailing address, which I failed to mention, is The Horn. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV25801. Checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid. And thank you very kindly. Coming perilously close to gimmick infringement, Ron says, Bob, dot, dot, dot. Sorry, Ron. I don't think it's... No. Other Ron and Raleigh. Nope, that's not gimmick infringement. That's just two Bobs. But Ron says, hey, do the show at a Speedo, some shiny oil with the occasional slow-mo, etc. Charge $10 a month for the video feed. You could get a new tire for that Gulfstream. Oh. No. The horror. The horror. But no, thank you. Thank you for thinking about it. Always out there brainstorming. Mm-hmm. That's one thing video would do away with here. You know, it's kind of fun in the height of summer to do naked radio. Just because that'd have to go away too. Then again, no, me naked, not so much. No. Other stuff out there. You may recall a conversation we had with the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan, about the trend toward letting students well, it's not a trend. It's a damn law in Texas and Kansas. It's a that young scholars on college campuses can now carry firearms into their college classes. What do you mean I gotta see? Wolverines. I did not misspell Wolverines. Bang! Well, it's getting weirder and weirder in Texas, of course. Among other things, memos are being circulated in Texas State University campuses. Over at The Guardian, Tom Dart writes, when the University of Texas released a report last week detailing where it plans to allow guns on its Austin campus, Nora Dolliver's choice of graduate schools narrowed by one, the languages student at the University of Chicago, which is no slouch of an academic institution, sent an email to staff with the subject, declining offer of admission due to campus carry guidelines, and will now pursue a dual master's in Russian and Eastern European Studies and Library Sciences elsewhere, someplace where she can feel confident that the person she's sitting next to is not packing heat. Meanwhile, at the University of Houston, the faculty senate there has put together a little slideshow to try to help faculty cope with the fact that their students may be maybe an entire room full of them are ready at a moment's notice to fill them full of lead and send death flaming out at a couple of thousand feet per second from the muzzle of their freedom protectors. The University of Houston slideshow suggests that academic, professors might, quote, be careful discussing sensitive topics. You might want to drop certain topics from your curriculum. If you sense anger among your students, you might want to, not go there. Have appointment only office hours, and with those students, if you can identify them, have contact with them only in controlled circumstances. That's where we are. Lisa Moore, a founder of the Gun Free University of Texas group and a professor of English and Women's and Gender Studies, hell, that probably makes her a target already, said the impact of the campus carry law on UT's reputation, recruitment, and retention of both faculty and staff has already begun to be felt. I personally know of at least two cases of senior faculty hires in which a top candidate withdrew, one from Harvard, one from the University of Virginia, citing concern over these laws. She continued that the legislature, in its gun frenzy, is crippling our ability to fulfill the mandate set forth in the Texas Constitution, which directs the state to provide its citizens with a university of the first class. But consider that. I mean, the academy is where we consider hard topics. It's where we try to engage critical thinking skills and learn critical thinking skills so as to be able to sort the intellectual wheat from the non-intellectual chaff. But now professors working in the University of Texas system, don't go there. Don't go there. Be careful discussing sensitive topics. Yeah, yeah, too sensitive. The hell? Sensitive topics? Isn't the purpose of going to college to deal with sensitive topics? I mean, how in the sweet name of all do you conduct a study in women's and gender studies using only non-sensitive topics? God damn, it's a history of repression and oppression. Dogman pointing out, the Kochs have learned to donate and rescind monies to higher education to influence new voters. Well, there we go. And see, if we can't touch sensitive topics in college classrooms, then, I don't know, then suddenly biology, too, just is just a soundtrack and the skies are not cloudy all day, accompanying little film strips of Adam and Eve riding their goddamn dinosaur to church. Because that's, you know, where we're going. And it's not a place that we're going because we want to go there. It's a place toward which we are being driven.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen. Well, congratulations. There's your diploma. Wow. Thanks. Thanks very kindly to Glenn for chipping in. We now have only $225 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. James with a note, subject line, edumacation. I love it when Republicans educate me about the history of the Democratic Party. This goes back to Daryl Issa. I wonder if they know that virtually all Republicans in the Deep South are descendants of Democrats. Shh. Don't tell them. James, don't engage in sensitive subjects. They might shoot you. For Jesus. And over to the stress line. Is that you, Harry?
Yes, it is, Bob. Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry to say...
Oh, I'm sorry to say maybe his battery was dying. Damn. Well, Harry, if it wasn't your battery, if it was me, feel free to call back. Please do. I always enjoy our conversations. I just wanted to I wanted to deal with that topic before we engaged in our own conversation. Are you back, Harry?
Yeah, hi. I don't know what that was.
Nor I.
Okay. Anyway, well, I'm glad I'm still able to go ahead. What I was saying was, you may not have caught any of it, I was saying that I was wondering and speculating whether the University of Texas system has in any way, whether its budget for mental health for students has in any way increased or has been looked at, you know, because it just strikes me that, I mean, instead of, you know, worrying about guns, I think that, you know, a university should be worrying about the mental or the emotional health of their students. And it's as if, you know, the whole thing is kind of upside down. You know, it's instead now we're giving students these, you know, now students have weapons, and regardless of their state of mind, now they're telling the faculty to be careful. I mean, it's just, It's bizarre to me.
It is bizarre, and you have an abiding respect for the purposes and the pursuits of academia. Our correspondence, yes, and our conversations tell me that the education you received, took, as we say, that it stuck, that it made an impression on you. My question, Harry, is why should institutions of higher learning have to think about issues of kids carrying guns on campus?
Oh, I agree. I was just thinking that, frankly, they, in a sense, our society should ban, certainly universities, should be banning weapons of any kind.
Let's remember that in the state of Texas, the way this law is written, if you've got the money to send Precious Pumpkin to, say, Southern Methodist University, or Baylor there in Waco, whose lovely campus I have seen, it is perfectly legal in Texas for those private institutions to ban firearms and make sure that Precious Pumpkin never has to sit next to some disaffected dude with a gun.
Yes. Yeah. Well.
Now, I mean, how much clearer a delineation between wealth privilege and non-wealth unprivilege does one need in order for it to become achingly clear what's at work here?
Oh yes. No, I think it makes the situation much worse, as you just pointed out. You know, I mean, even people who are extreme, or you would say perhaps extreme critics of the academy, and somebody like Noam Chomsky, I mean, he has often said in his speeches, although that, he has plenty of complaints the way that academia is run, but he has often said that, it's probably the last bastion of safety, in our American society. And so, it's incredible. I just find it unbelievable that a university system would end up, in a sense, being taken hostage by this kind of law.
You and I, there's a little bit of an age gap between us. But in any of the institutions of higher learning you ever attended, did you ever hear any conversations of, I'd feel much better about going to Western Civ if I was only packing heat?
Actually, no. And, as I said, people do sometimes, get into emotional trouble in college and things. And that's why I was saying, wouldn't it be better to, in a sense, give the University of Texas, more funding for mental health?
Absolutely. Because, these are young adults.
Their brains, if we believe today's science, supposedly the brain is still developing in certain ways, including judgment, until about age 26. So these are people who are still very, apt to be influenced and also apt to be, I suppose, at times, very confused. Certainly, there were times when I was confused.
Sure. Now, I freely confess a fascination in Greek Civ with the sarissas of the Greek phalanges. Because those things were like 16 feet long and had really sharp points on them. You gave me a C? But that speaks to mental health, not to the fact that the classroom would have been made safer if we'd all had 16-foot thrusting spears.
No, I mean, in fact, actually thinking back, I would say that actually had I gone, there were certain college classes I was in, probably the larger ones rather than the smaller ones, where there indeed were people that I would be very worried about if I knew that they could be carrying a gun. And I'm not sure, I would sit as far away from it. Well, I might not even go to class some days, or I might go and then wait to see how that person's mood was, seemed to be that day. I mean, it's just,
and all the turmoil of young adulthood
And absolutely, there is.
You know, breakups, relationship troubles.
Absolutely, particularly in a college situation.
And, you know, you've been going steady. Yeah. Do we even use that phrase anymore? Through your freshman and sophomore year. And so you sit there and you pick your classes together because you both make sure that you're able to sit next to each other holding hands in accounting 204. And then your junior year comes along and you signed up for accounting 309 together. And then one of you says, you know, we're done. And you're still sitting right there together in accounting 309 at the University of Texas, and you've both got guns.
Yeah. No, it's... I can't really... I mean, I'm not really... I'm totally serious, but I cannot imagine anything worse than that because, yeah, I mean, you know, if you put the guns together with, you know, early adult, late adolescent turmoil... of, you know, many different kinds.
And they're probably and our hypothetical couple are probably both members of the Young College Republicans there on the campus of UT.
Right.
So that means that they're dedicated, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, gun-dementalist, freedom protectors. And they wake up in the morning, Wolverines, honey, Wolverines.
No, and also, you know, if any of these, you know, campuses or, you know, residential campuses, or to the extent that they have dormitories, you know, I mean, those things, in a sense, you know, in a sense, push people together in ways that can't be avoided all the time. You know, even just passing somebody on a, you know, path
And Bob, who is in Texas, Harry, has taken your suggestion to its next step, and he says, about increasing the mental health budget for Texas legislators?
Well, I think they're beyond hope. I'm sorry. I have to say it just came out, but yeah, I don't understand. You have to worry about their what they might call I don't know what to call mental health. Well, oh, they, you know, in a sense, they're. Not so much in their emotions, but basically their thought processes, you know, and whether it's a thought disorder, because it just seems so totally, you know, both illogical and, well, you know, ridiculous and insane. I mean, I'll use that word.
Cindy just wrote in from the Great Northwest, and she said, professional mental health at colleges? Nah, in Texas, they don't believe in no pea psychiatry.
Well,
and that's kind of hard because, you know, as you and I probably both know, the University of Texas is a magnificent institution of higher learning as far as state universities go.
Oh, absolutely. As far as state universities go, absolutely.
It's a magnificent academic experience. And as college experiences go, I had the privilege of once seeing a college game day for a home game at the University of Texas, and they put everybody to shame, Harry. I mean, everything is bigger in Texas. Those suckers brought brought industrial hospital generators to run their 72-inch big screen TVs so that they could watch Alabama kick the living shit out of Texas A&M before they had to go into the stadium. I mean, I admired you. And then Dr. Allen and I walked around the campus, and I was just like, this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, look, I got to say, as basically a person who's, you know, not a deep fanatic sports fan, the fact is, the university also has had money in the past 20 or 30 years to attract, you know, world-class faculty. I mean, there have been... World-class physicist Steven Weinberg, at least for a while, was at University of Texas.
Well, and you know my fascination with anthropology and archaeology. There's a world-class department there. They bless their hearts, you can still go to the University of Texas and if you come away with it, you've got a right respectable degree in Latin and Greek and the classics.
Well, I didn't know that, but that's very impressive. I mean, we can say, oh, well, there are private institutions that are, you know, maybe in some ways better, but no, you're right. It's a public university system. It's one of the best in the country, if not the best at this point. I don't, you know.
And Texas promulgated its gun rules. They said, yes, guns in classrooms, no guns in dormitories. Now, how they're going to enforce that, I got no clue. I guess everybody's just going to keep them in their cars.
Well, that is...
Because that'll work.
Another thought disorder. But no, cause, no, it's illogical, because where are they going to... If they're going to have them, where are they going to keep them? You know, I mean, I just have this image, you know, being in first grade where you have those desks where that top was hinged and you had like a little sort of metal bowl underneath where you could keep your belongings. But they don't have those in college. So where are you going to keep these things if you can't take them back to your dormitory?
See, I'm kind of...
No, it's a thought. I mean, it's...
And what
special lockers for just for, you know, I don't know. I didn't realize that. I wasn't listening carefully enough.
Maybe that's the answer, that they'll have to spend a purple bajillion dollars installing gun lockers in the dormitories. And that's going to be a lovely idea, because guns are valued. I mean, those suckers are fungible, Harry. So you're gonna have to use some sort of space age technology to. The gun lockers are going to have to weigh more than a damn diesel pickup truck.
And be
bolted into the magma into the magma core of the Earth.
No, I think you're right. Well, actually, what will happen is, guns will get stolen, and then the whole thing will just get exponentially worse.
I know these people in Texas. They love their guns, and I don't mean all people in Texas. But the Republicans and whatnot, I know they love their guns, and I know it's part of their culture. I mean, I'm not one of these people who says, when I'm master of the universe and we're running everything on love and unicorn farts, it will just make the guns disappear. That ain't going to happen. But this is not always. Well, this has not always been Texas. Yeah, sure. You could drive around with a bottle of beer and your hunting rifle and the gun rack in the back of your truck, and because that's what it's a culture that had white guys on horses with rifles tucked into the sheaths there on the side of the saddle. I mean, I had the toys as a kid. Hello, gun culture. But this is not that. Even for Republicans, this is a case of act in haste, repent in leisure, of almost proportions.
No, I would agree. I think it's very scary. I mean, I grew up in a slightly different culture from yours. You know, I grew up in the Northeast, and, you know, unless you're in Vermont or New Hampshire or something, that, you know, there's a lot less tolerance for guns or that kind of, the gun culture. But regardless, I don't know how a state like Texas is going to be able ever to justify what they've done. I mean, to me, it just speaks to the general, problems of the ways in which, frankly, the whole country, that we allow violence not so much to happen, but make it available, because we make the things that do violence, available, like guns. That to me is, and if Texas, if this law is going to stay on the books, I would say to myself, what's the point of going to Texas anymore? Why even go, I'm sorry.
No, please.
No, I think that's pretty much, meant to end my sentence.
Well, by contrast, eventually, just because, and we all know what a math genius I'm not, but the law of averages says that sooner or later, something awful is going to happen in a University of Texas or other Texas state college university classroom. It has to. And
I agree. Judging by the probabilities that have already happened in Walmarts or in Kmart.
Right, and frankly, I think the most likely scenario is not, and because I want to be fair about this, the most likely scenario, Harry, is not that somebody's going to holler, what do you mean I got a C, and blow away the professor. And I don't mean to speak cavalierly in those terms, but the more likely scenario is that somebody's gun falls out of somebody's book bag, and of course they've got it. They've got one in the chamber because when the bad guy with the gun shows up, you don't have time to rack around in. I mean, you got to get blazing fast. So it'll fall out of a book bag, and it'll go off. The gun just went off, and it'll kill somebody's precious young scholar.
In person. Yeah, and, I'll put it this way. I think that's like the best of the worst scenarios.
Well, it's the best of the worst because there's no criminal intent. Yeah, there's no criminal intent. It's just the kind of garden variety negligence that plagues the human experience.
Well, an accident, just the gun dropping, whatever out of a book bag,
And the Texas Open Carry Society will be there to issue a press release saying, "Well, accidents happen. This is no reason." Except that they don't.
Well, look, Bob, you are certainly a graduate of a law school, and we can. And as you know, in tort law, the fact sometimes society decides that, something is dangerous enough and you end up not with negligence but with strict liability. And, God forbid that I could say that because I'm sure every, gun culture person in this country would hate me for that, but I don't know. What else? What other solution are you going to have? Because they don't do that, then people are going to be, in a sense, negligent and not, let's say, tie up their guns or whatever. I don't know how even certain guns can be, disarmed or somehow,
law school, as I've said before, law school rewires your brain. What if the strap on your book bag, and I don't know about you, but, I never put both straps of the book bag on. I just slung it over my shoulder and went. And what if the strap gives and the book bag just falls off your shoulder and the gun inside the book bag just goes off, et cetera, et cetera? Is it too much to ask for strict liability for something like that or mandatory insurance?
Well, that's why I mentioned that, because I didn't think, you're from a more gun culture kind of state both now and where you were born than I was. So I know I'm happy to suggest that. I think it's
right. But the thing is, I know what the response to that is, Harry.
I'm sorry?
I know what the response. No, I do know what the response to that is.
Oh,
well, that's just an attempt to bootstrap us into gun registration.
Yeah, well, don't tell anybody where I live, Bob. Please keep me safe.
I get it. But I mean, I got the perfect example here. Granted, it's not in academia. It's in Idaho. They got a place there called the Rupert Gun Range, Harry. And some militia members had gathered there for a little camaraderie and collegiality and good fellowship. The 3% Idaho militia, and they were going to just work on their freedom protecting skills. And as the story says, it's not clear who was handling the weapon when it fired.
because
guns and dragons, they're just one little burp and the fire comes out, and it's not clear who was handling the weapon when it fired, but what is clear is that an unnamed 12-year-old girl who was there with her daddy was drilled through the stomach. and had to be airlifted out for emergency treatment.
No, it's horrible. I mean, yeah.
And that was Monday.
Yeah. And well, remember, we lost the female nuclear physicist a few, was it 6 months ago or something?
Oh, no, that was Christmas before last.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, geez.
Yeah, with her Freedom Protector purse.
Yeah. And I guess the thing is that, I mean, as you might also, I hope, maybe you'll agree, you know, even though, you know, of course, lawyers end up always, you know, often arguing about very small things. The one thing it doesn't like is uncertainty. So when it's, you know, when you say it fired, you know, that's the kind of thing that we used to be that the law didn't like because
things don't just happen and all liability is based on fault. And you cannot assign fault to a gun.
Right. And if you do, then though you got to have some sort of, you know, some sort of what they would might call remedy or whatever. You know,
right, because we're gonna track causation to a human agency.
I'm saying, you know, if it doesn't work, and I understand this, and I know people think, what, you know, why does it have to be causation? But the problem is, if you don't have it, then you have to have some other, you know, the law, in a sense, at least from a boss point of view, basically says, some public policy solution that would basically, in a sense, keep this all in check.
Well, I mean, at some point in time, you had to memorize all those obnoxious equitable maxims, didn't you?
Equity very old. That's the problem.
Equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy.
I've always felt that a lot of the law, you know, is somewhat, you know, out of date. But that one, I suppose, yeah, still applies. Sure. I've tried to forget it, but it's true. But it's also this, you know, more modern notion of, you know, the public policy solution, you know. If indeed there's no sort of private law solution, then there's got to be some sort of, you know, public law, something, policy or a, you know, policy argument, because you know that something bad is going to happen. Or it's already happened
because
once.
It's reasonable and foreseeable, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's already happened once, and then everybody's, you know, scrambling for a remedy or whatever, or a solution. And
you know, just the general responses. I mean, this story it goes through me like a dose of salt. She's in. Oh, there went Harry again, and I don't know why. But just to wrap this up, Brandon Curtis is the president of the Idaho 3% Militia Group, and he said, it sounds as if she's going to be okay. She was able to tell her father she loved him as they were loading him into the helicopter. And then another member of the group offered thoughts and prayers and said, and y'all remember, this is a reminder to watch your barrel discipline. Yeah, like as not the beer barrel discipline.
I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe it's genetic or whatever, my temperament, but you know, anything that to me comes close to, in a way they can be prevented, eradicating life to me is just, you know, I just find it heinous. I'm not even sure gun ranges should be available where that kind of thing could even be possible.
What's a 12-year-old girl doing on a gun range?
No, but I'm saying, how could she even be, in other words, why would anybody be in, even within any, you know, range of accidentally being shot is what I'm saying. I just think we're too forgiving about something like this that is so horrible, you know, and we, in other words, I think we lump it in with other things maybe a little too much, when in fact, you know, I don't see any other uses for, I mean, guns are weapons to me, that's it. I just don't see any other use for them, and I just wouldn't, you know, I don't, you know, if I were the governor of the state or whatever, as you were saying, master of the universe. Well, I you know, even if I don't know if I would even allow guns, but if I did, certainly no, you wouldn't have a shooting range where anybody would ever be even, you know, likely, more likely than not or whatever.
Well, I mean, but that's, you know, that's a measure of the distance we've traveled in this firearms madness, Harry.
I agree. I think you're right.
I mean, it was in the 1970s, the early 70s, when that notorious gang of pinko commie liberals who called themselves Lynyrd Skynyrd sang, "Handguns were made for killing. They ain't no good for nothing else."
Yeah, Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah, they were quite the
yeah, fellow fifth columnist, fellow travelers. Absolutely.
No. I just don't know what to say. I mean, I'm, you know, it all of us. I mean, to me, I got to say the NRA is a cult, and I'm sorry, but I think that's, you know, the whole gun culture to me is really just a cult, which, you know, and I'm not saying that as a nice thing, obviously.
No, I mean, I'm past that. You know, I think the NRA is Barad Dur, and Wayne LaPierre is the Eye of Sauron, and Ted Nugent is a freaking Nazgul. Okay, they're just pure evil. There is nothing redeeming about them at this point in time.
Yeah, well, that's sort of. Thank you for saying better than I could. When I was calling them a cult, I mean, you know, to me, I mean, cults, you know, as people study cult to define them. They're coercive, manipulative. They have charismatic leaders who, in a sense, appear or say that they have something that the people who join the cult want. You know, it's all very manipulative and often very coercive. And that, yeah, I just think this is all a cult. And I think if people, I don't know how to wake people up, but I don't know what to say. Bob, I should let you go and let other people join. And you know, it's the end of the show anyway, close to. So I just want to put in another recommendation for your show as one of the few progressive radio shows that's going to survive and keep us informed and bring us empathy in the future. And I just want to remind people, you know, that FDR, his fireside chats were done by radio. You know, no talking heads, no video. And I think a lot can be done by radio. And certainly, I think you've proved that over time.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you very, very kindly.
And I know I should let you go, so thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. You take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that, of course, is Harry, who I don't know what it's like on other radio programs. But I'm just, I mean, if I could turn up the echo enough, you know, we could do the, I consider myself, self, the luckiest, test, man. I do. Can you imagine what it must be like, when he's done with his 3 hours of opioid-fueled madness? Don't you imagine that Flush Flimball just flings the headphones as far as he can get them and maybe just slaps the microphone away and says, "Done for another day. I don't have to put up with those idiots anymore." Not me. Not here. The 3 hours race past. And then, lo and behold, they're gone. And I find myself saying, damn, I can't wait until tomorrow. And I can't wait until tomorrow. We've got a conversation that hopefully, technological miracles being what they are, will come off flawless and without a hitch. We've got a conversation to begin the program tomorrow that's going to be amazing. I'm going to be talking with Anthony Conright at the beginning of the program tomorrow evening. in regard to a piece that he recently wrote. And I think you're going to find it most compelling, to say the least. So be here. We'll get right at it at the beginning of the program. And golly gee, if between now and then we could knock down the remainder of the deficit, it would be wonderful. And that number stands at $225. And thanks very kindly to Asa and Jean Ann and Glenn for getting it down to that. Thank you very, very much. So, hey, got to get out of here. Malloy time. Talk to you later. Have a great night. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.